This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Lion A, Bufflin, Wheeler. Wheeler to the short side, scores! Boy, how many times have we seen that as of late? And the Jets get the game's opening goal. It comes on a 5-on-3, and they will stay on the power play.
We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to be joined in studio by my good friends, Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Gentlemen, it's so very nice to see you. How are you both doing as the 2018-19 NHL season gets underway?
I think I speak for everybody here. We're doing awesome. Hockey is back. There's a little bit of snow on the ground today in Winnipeg. And it's the best time of the year, right? You've got a little wild card action happening in Major League Baseball, and then you've got the start of the NHL season, right? So it's the best time of the year, Drew. You know that.
I do know that. Let's get right into it. We got lots to take care of on this season preview show. We're going to go, as we always do, division by division, team by team. And, of course, we're going to start with the Winnipeg Jets by talking about some Winnipeg Jets over-unders for the 2018-19 NHL season. We do this each and every year. We look at the Winnipeg Jets and say, are they going to go over this number or are they going to go under this number? We talk about games played. We talk about goals. We talk about assists. We talk about individual performances and team performance. We'll start with this first question for you, Sean, and for you, Ezzy. Last season, the Winnipeg Jets top line of Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler combined for 208 points in 217 man games played. This year, the trio will combine for over or under 224.5 points. That would be an average of just under 75 points per player.
Yeah, I'll go first here, Drew, and I'm going over. When you think about last year, the big question was Kyle Connor even going to play the full season with the Jets? We didn't know if he was going to stick with the Jets, and he ends up getting in the Calder Trophy conversation and scores 30 goals. So for me, I had them at 240 points. I've got Wheeler and Scheifele at 85, and then I've got Connor at 70. And we know that Wheeler had 90 last year, so it could be more than that. And sure, you know, Kyle Connor would have to get those assists up, but I have it at over 240 points for those guys.
Sean, your thoughts? Over or under 224.5 points for those three players?
I, too, will go over. Also, boys, nice to see you again.
Yes.
Another fun-filled season of the NHL this week back on TSN 1290. I'm going to go with the over as well. A lot of factors playing into this. Last year, Mark Scheifele got hurt, missed a variety of games throughout the regular season. Blake Wheeler, obviously, you know, his magical job filling in at the center position, but Mark Scheifele, one third of the very potent line, missing for a big part of the season. Another part, Kyle Connor, getting his feet wet at the NHL level. Now he's got a little bit more confidence, a little more established offensive game. He's looked solid in training camp so far, moving well, decisive with the puck. And then you look at the power play unit, that top power play unit, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler all on the same first power play unit. They got Patrick Laine there as well. Kyle Connor taking that goal line position on the power play now. It's a lot of opportunities for points for those three.
So we have two overs in the first over-under for the 2018-19 Winnipeg Jets season. Moving on to question two, you mentioned him, Patrick Laine, proficient on the power play for the Winnipeg Jets. Taking away Timu Solani, so taking Timu Solani out of the equation, the last two players to score 50 goals as a member of the Winnipeg Jets were Dale Hawerchuk and Keith Tkachuk. Hawerchuk scored 53 goals back in 84-85, and Tkachuk scored 50 on the nose in 95-96. This year, Patrick Laine will have over or under 50.5 goals for the Winnipeg Jets.
I'm going over, and I've said it many times before on this radio station. I think it's just a matter of time before Laine hits 60 goals, and some might disagree with that, but I think if Patrick Laine is healthy this year and he plays the majority of the game, so let's say, you know, 80 plus, I think he's going to hit 55 goals, Drew, so I'm going over.
Sean, your thoughts on that? Over or under 50.5 goals?
I took a little bit of time thinking about this one. It wasn't as easy a decision for me just because of he's working with some new line mates now. You know, getting used to his lighter, leaner body, maybe not enough power. He's going to have to adjust the sights maybe a little bit. He didn't score in the preseason. He didn't score in his first preseason in the NHL also. Then he went on a crazy tear to start his rookie campaign. So that means absolutely nothing. But I think that once he gets going and he finds that chemistry with Matthew Perreault and Brian Little, two guys who are pretty much starting the season looking for Patrick Laine. That's pretty much, they've probably had a one-on-one meeting with the two of them being like, okay, we just got to get this guy the puck as often as we can. I'm going to say over, though. I'm going over.
You're going over, so you both think he gets the magic
I'm
to
say,
at least
just,
51 goals.
Just based on his progression, over.
Very good. Patrick Laine's fortnight brother-in-arms is Nikolaj Ehlers. He saw his assist total drop from 39 in his sophomore season to 31 last season. This season, Nikolaj Ehlers will have over or under 35.5 assists. Sean, we'll start with you on this one.
I was going to say under on that one, but I'm going to also kind of flip it and say we see an increase in his goal tally because Nikolaj Ehlers now been labeled a driver on that new line with Roslovic and Veselainen and Lemieux, Dano, whichever player fits into that roster spot. But I'm going to say that he's going to be looking more of a shoot-first mentality this year. So I'm going to say the assists are down, but I'm going to say he's over 30 goals.
Ezzy, over or under 35 and a half assists?
Yeah, I'm with Shawnee, and I'm very bullish on Nikolaj Ehlers, as you know, Drew. And I think he's going to be right around 30 to 35 goals. I actually think he's going to be way over. I have his assists somewhere around 45 this year.
So you think he gets close to 80 points?
Yep.
Wow, okay. A bold statement to start the year here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're doing our Jets over-under predictions for the 2018-19 season. Last year, the Jets had eight players, all forwards, reach double digits in goals scored. This year, the Jets will have over or under 11.5 players score double digits in goals.
This is a really good one, Drew, and, you know, these are all good. I'm going over, and I'm going to start with Dustin Byfuglien, who didn't have double-digit goal totals last year for the first time in a really long time. I think Buff is probably going to be somewhere around 15 goals this year. I think I'm going to put Jack Roslovic in there. I wouldn't be surprised if Jack Roslovic gets to 20 goals this year. And for me, Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, you consider that Adam Lowry missed a lot of games last year. I would expect Adam Lowry to be somewhere around 12 to 15 goals. And same thing goes for Andrew Kopp. I think he's going to take another jump with his goal totals and be somewhere around 10 to 15 goals. And same thing goes for Brandon Tanev. So
40 goals.
Right. So if you consider those five players,
yeah,
that's 13.
There you go. Sean, your thoughts on that over or under 11 and a half players scoring in double digits for the Winnipeg Jets?
I am going to go under.
I was going
to go the under. I think it's going to be really close, but I think that a majority of the firepower will come from a few players or from a few different lines, but I think that the mentality maybe shifts for that Lowry, Kopp, Tanev line of just maybe defense first, put the puck in the net if the opportunity presents itself, but I'm going to go under.
And Shawnee, I imagine you agree with Byfuglien and Roslovic. It's probably Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry. Maybe one or two of those guys don't get to double digits, right?
Yeah, it's going to be that line that kind of brings it down.
Moving to the goaltending position, Connor Hellebuyck lost consecutive starts only twice last season, on January 12th and 13th and February 9th and 11th. Connor Hellebuyck's longest regulation time losing streak this year will be over or under 3.5 games in a row.
Drew, I'm going to go under, and I mean, you just mentioned it in the question. He didn't have a three-game losing streak last year. I think he will have a three-game losing streak this year, but I don't think he'll have a four-game losing streak.
Sean?
I'm also going to go under. All we've heard throughout training camp and through a variety of the Jet players is that they learned so much about the little details and, you know, learning to win and limiting those losing streaks. Last year was a big year in the development of that mentality, and I think it's just going to carry forward this year. Connor Hellebuyck, mentally strong. I'm going under.
A couple more before we get to Murat Ateş of TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg coming up in the next segment. From February 20th until April 2nd of last year, Matthew Perreault played 19 games without registering a goal. He only registered one assist in that time frame. This year, Matthew Perreault's longest goal-scoring drought will be over or under 11.5 games in length.
I'm going to go under, Drew. I don't think Matty Perreault is going to have that long of a goal-scoring drought this year. I could see it being maybe, you know, 6 to 10 games, but I don't think we're going to see, you know, 12, 15, certainly 19 like we saw last year. Even though he is a streaky scorer, I just don't see that this year. I'm going to go under.
Sean?
I am also going to go... What number was that?
That was number 9. That was number 10 on the
number
page
10.
You're looking at.
I'm going under. Right. Matty Perreault goals. Right. Under. Different role. He's playing not on the Armia Matt Hendricks line this year that maybe got him some favorable matchups, playing with much more skilled players. A lot of focus will be on Patrick Laine on that line, who we know is a pretty good passer, as is Brian Little. I think Matthew Perreault, very crafty player, can find himself in front of the net and get some goals. So I'm going to say under.
Last over under, Jets head coach Paul Maurice needs 45 wins to pass Dick Irvin for 7th all-time in wins among NHL head coaches. It will take the Winnipeg Jets over or under 74.5 games played for Paul Maurice to pass Dick Irvin for 7th place.
Yeah, that's an amazing milestone, by the way. I'm going to go under, Drew. But I'm going to go under by only a few games because I think the Jets are going to be around 50 to 55 wins this year, probably closer to 50 wins. So I'm going to say under. He'll probably get to 45 around games 72 to 74.
Sean?
I, too, am going to go under. And if the Jets perform to the standard and expectations that everyone is pegging themselves and that they've kind of put amongst themselves, I think it's very attainable.
We will find out throughout the course of the year, and of course we'll cycle back and look at these over-unders later on in the season to see how our prognostication skills were. When we come back, Murat Atesh of TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg joins us. We talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg, you know that he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's a good friend of ours and a good friend of the program. Murat Atesh, we're pleased to have you join us. How are you, Murat?
Doing quite well. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Our pleasure. Always want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets with you, good sir. You know, Murat, as we sit here and training camp is complete and everything else and the team is ready to kickstart the 2018-19 season, what did we learn at the conclusion of training camp? You know, the roster being what it is, are there any surprises to you with the final 23-man roster?
You know, at the beginning of training camp, I really thought that it was going to come down to Christian Vesalainen, Brendan Lemieux, and Mason Appleton versus Tucker Pullman for essentially that 23rd forward spot. Nobody could predict the tragedy to the Patan family that's kept him away from the team. And with that battle for that spot, I really thought to myself that, you know, Tucker Pullman with his NHL experience and his defensive acumen and the fact that he succeeded in a sheltered role last night with 8 defensemen, it's not a shock. I think most teams prefer 14 forwards, 7D, which opened up a spot to be won. And I think the impressive thing is Christian Vesalainen stepping in and looking like he had professional defensive zone positioning, offensive zone board play, all those sorts of things that you look at a 19-year-old young Finn playing in North America for the first full season. You wonder about those things. To see him come in and snap up a spot, I think that's an impressive storyline this season.
Murat, you're a numbers guy, and I know that you've been very vocal on Twitter about the Jets' second line from last year. Of course, that's before they acquired Paul Stastny. That second line being, of course, Brian Little, Nikolai Ehlers, and Patrick Laine. We know that Matty Perreault is going to start the season on the left wing with Brian Little and Patrick Laine. How long do you think that line stays together?
You know, I think it's one of those situations where everyone is aware that the Jets' second line has had a little bit of trouble. There's been comments on the chemistry between Little, Ehlers, and Laine. My own read on the reason that they struggled as a trio is there's a lot of puck skill there, but not a lot of puck recovery. I don't think you can count on Brian Little at this stage of his career to be the sole possession driver on a line. The addition of Matthew Perreault with Little and Ehlers last season when Shifley was hurt, and now with Laine this season to open the year. What that's going to do is it's going to win a little bit more puck battles. It's going to extend offensive zone time. Matthew Perreault isn't a finisher on the level that Nick Ehlers is, but what he can do is win pucks and create chances for other players. And I think Brian Little put together with that is going to benefit from that. Patrick Laine will ideally, he's been joking about hockey being hard for him again, and we know that he scores almost every time he's been talking about that. So I think the recipe is good there, and I think for that reason they'll probably have the success to sustain. And the only question is, can you get Nick Ehlers enough minutes to feast on the fact that he's yet another talented young forward that Winnipeg has?
Yeah, Murat, it's a perfect segue for the question I was going to ask you, because last year we saw, you know, the Armia, Perreault, Hendricks, you know, quote-unquote fourth line, get some pretty favorable matchups and look pretty dominant at the ice on the ice at times. Do you kind of expect the same thing with that Ehlers, Roslovic, Vesalainen line, or whoever else is slotted into that line with Roslovic and Ehlers for the time being?
I think that it's the greatest landing spot that you could have if you're Christian Vesalainen, in that you've got a Nick Ehlers on your line, you've got a Jack Roslovic on your line. They're not the possession stalwarts that Matthew Perreault was last season and is going to be again this year. And what they're also not is as experienced, I guess, in certain situations as Joel Armia would be and Matt Hendricks would have been. However, they're very talented hockey players. And even if Jack Roslovic has some growing pains as a center, it's a good position to be in. And Winnipeg's forward depth outstrips almost everybody else's in the NHL. They're going to get good opportunities, and they have the puck talent to bury those opportunities. It's a great spot. I don't think the possession numbers will be quite as insane, but the finishing talent is there. And it's their ability to chip in is going to be one of the things that helps Winnipeg win hockey games for sure.
Murat Ateş is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. You can read Murat's work at theathletic.com here in Winnipeg. Murat, the left side of the Jets' defense has been a hot topic really all season long. We know Josh Morrissey certainly is the stud of the group. If you were the coach, how would you deploy the other left side defenseman?
That's one of the most difficult questions that you ask for sure. I, at this point, would be well known for my praise for the season that Sami Niku had last year, just in terms of historic seasons by 21-year-old defensemen in the AHL. It put him in some fairly elite company, including guys like Tori Krug, Sami Vatanen, even Dustin Byfuglien from way back when as well. Players who have gone on to successful top four roles with a lot of offensive contribution at the NHL level. And a lot of what those guys had in common as well is that by their 22-year-old season, they were playing at least half a year in the NHL. I know Sami Niku has struggled with some of the battles and some of the positioning elements of defense. I think that by the end of the season, we're going to see a little bit more of an audition from him, because I really do think his puck skill gives him that much to add to the equation. In the meantime, I struggle to pick between Ben Chiarot and Joe Morrow, who have each had possession-related success with Dustin Byfuglien in small samples throughout last season. It's when you have a partner who's that good, and Byfuglien being that effective as he is, you don't need a Josh Morrissey as a pairing partner for him. The Jets could probably have some success with either Chiarot or Morrow in there. And then I really like the Kulikov-Myers pairing when everybody's at full health as well. I'm not sure if Kulikov is going to start the season in the lineup for the Jets, but I think that he'll be capable of contributing soon, should he be able. So I like that pairing as well. I think they're in a tough spot right now without a cavalry coming in, and I think it's going to be up to that Byfuglien and Morrow or Chiarot pairing to really hold the fort a little bit.
Murat, this time of year, everything's fresh, and everyone has their predictions. And as you know, not just at the Athletic or TSN, but across the hockey world, a lot of people are picking the Jets not only to win the Central Division, but to win the Stanley Cup, or at the very least be a Stanley Cup finalist. I'm not going to ask you whether or not you think the Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup, but in terms of weaknesses, when you look at this Jets squad, what is the biggest weakness that you see?
I think it's that left side that we were just talking about. In terms of its ability to shut down opposition, everybody knows that the Jets have offense to burn. They're four lines deep. They have skill on all four lines. They can create chances and finish them with the best of them. Power play is good. Penalty kill is a strength in terms of controlling shot quality, but there's just so many shots. I worry about Connor Hellebuck's ability to run the kind of save percentage on the PK that he did last season just because it was so historically good. That stuff doesn't always repeat itself. There's something to watch out for there. But I really think it comes down to Winnipeg's ability in their own zone to prevent those high-quality plays. I know it's just the preseason, but watching against New Jersey where 4 out of the 5 goals were scored off of seam passes, I can't think of a single game all last season long where a team generated 4 seam passes against the Winnipeg Jets, let alone buried on all of them. They will be able to score. They are going to be an excellent team. Don't get me wrong there, but the weakness available is their defensive zone coverage, and I think that second pair is going to have a lot to do with it.
Well, Murat, two guys that are going to take a lot of the scoring load on their shoulders, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and a lot has been made about the chemistry between these two. And it's got to be even more encouraging for Jet fans when you hear that they're now training in the offseason together and they're almost working like a quarterback-receiver pair. That's got to be some encouraging with regards to the chemistry part of me. And then you add Kyle Connor to that line. That is going to be one potent line for teams to handle.
Yeah, they're absolutely for real. And that's... these aren't guys who ran hot percentages or got all the puck luck last season. They're not a question mark to me at all. And, like, if you're a Jets fan, what better story could you have than the two biggest drivers on your forward core, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, being the best of buds or training together and learning from each other as they do? I think from a human side of things, that's just a phenomenal thing that the Winnipeg Jets have going. And it's an interesting thing. I was looking at some primary points numbers recently, actually, for a piece that's coming up at The Athletic. And usually with primary points, so you knock off second assists, you discount goals and first assists, that metric actually repeats for a player. Like Blake Wheeler's primary point scoring will repeat more from season to season than if you keep those second assists in there. So we use that as an estimate of what a player's true offensive talent is. I was expecting to look at those numbers on that first line and find that Mark Scheifele was a driver and Blake Wheeler was a driver and that Kyle Connor was a little bit more of a passenger. Turns out he's very much in terms of first line offensive production, even with primary points using only of those compared to the rest of the NHL too. So there's just so much chemistry on that line, and it's a situation where a young guy in Kyle Connor has exactly the skill set and disposition to bury the chances that are created. And he's intelligent enough to create chances for his partners as well. So I think that top line, couldn't say enough nice things about them right now.
Last question, Murat Attash of TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The TLC line, Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp. From your estimation, where does that line stand sort of among the top shutdown lines, quote-unquote, in the NHL?
You know, quite sincerely, 100%, I did not believe in shutdown lines in the NHL anymore. I thought it was skill and offense top to bottom until the Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp line from last season. They controlled possession so well, and there are no real snipers among them, but they were able to control possession so well, play in the other team's end no matter who they play against all season long. Here's the crazy thing. A year ago today, they were a question mark. Mm-hmm. They were trying to cobble together that line or cobble together a bottom six. Right now, we enter Winnipeg Jets as a favorite in the Western Conference, partly on the strength of that line's ability to control the flow of play.
It's amazing what changes in 1 year's time. Murat Attash, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can read more of his work at TheAthletic.com. Murat, have a great season. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll do it again real soon.
Thanks, guys. You too. Have a great night.
Likewise. When we come back, we shift our focus to the NHL. We start going division by division, team by team, and we start with the Jets' chief competition in the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
For the Avalanche, they've had a power play goal in each of the last two games. Cross ice, McKinnon. Goal! Hey, Ben McKinnon. It's a power play goal, and it's 2-0 for the Avalanche.
The other pride of Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, Nathan McKinnon, returned to form last year for the Colorado Avalanche. They had a humongous turnaround from a bottom feeder in the league to a playoff team, largely on the strength of the performance of Nathan McKinnon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the bottom of the hour. This segment brought to you by our good friends, Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, we start by going division by division, team by team, and as I mentioned, we start with the Central Division, the division that, of course, hosts the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets finishing second last year in the Central Division, second overall in the entire NHL.
By the way, does anybody actually think that the Central Division isn't the best division in the league?
Who would think that?
You'd be hard-pressed to make an argument that it's not. I mean, the Pacific is improving, but it's certainly not at that level yet. And the Atlantic is not, and the Metropolitan is not. So the Central Division, in my mind, is still the hardest division in the league. Yes, I would agree with that statement.
Like, Drew, I think the Metro Division is a second, but I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I think a couple of years back it was close, but not anymore.
I would agree. I think you're onto something there, Dr. Ginsburg. Let's talk about the Nashville Predators, the President's Trophy-winning Nashville Predators, who, of course, we know lost in that seven-game series, sort of an epic seven-game series to the Winnipeg Jets last season. Nashville Predators, much like the Jets, didn't do a lot in the offseason. They had sort of three key additions, and really I'm stretching the word key on a lot of these. Their new guys are Dan Hamhuis, Zach Rinaldo, and Colin Blackwell, and I frankly don't know anything about Colin Blackwell. And their subtractions from their roster were Scotty Hartnell, who of course retired this week, Alexei Emelin, stay-at-home veteran defenseman, and Mike Fisher, who retired yet again after coming back mid-season last year.
Again.
He might be if they're playing well again. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Is this Nashville Predators team good enough to repeat as President's Trophy winners? And is there a lingering effect to the poor goaltending performance that Pekka-Rinne had against the Jets and arguably against the Avalanche in the playoffs last season?
Guys, I think they're good enough to repeat as President's Trophy champions. I don't personally think it's going to happen, and it's because I think other teams around them have gotten better. Other teams in the NHL have gotten better, as you mentioned, Drew.
And we'll get to your predictions at the end of this. When we get through the end of this division, we'll get to your playoff predictions, of course.
But, you know, you mentioned Scott Hartnell. You mentioned Mike Fisher. I mean, these are guys that you expected to either retire or not be with the Predators this year. The only real acquisition that they made was Dan Hamhuis. And Dan Hamhuis, Drew, is a third-pairing defenseman. I mean, Dan Hamhuis is probably only going to play, what, 10, 12, 14 minutes a game?
He's playing not the Alexei Yemelin role Yemelin
right
departed.
I mean,
with.
We know who the top four are. Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, and P.K. Subban, who I still believe are the best top four in the entire NHL. That's my own personal opinion. I know Shawnee Assor agrees with me, but when you're talking about the Nashville Predators, they're actually not one of the best teams up the middle. Ryan Johansson is a bona fide number one center, but, you know, Kyle Turris, Nick Bonino, you know, this, especially compared to the Jets, I mean, I don't think they're a top team when you compare them to some other teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs, for example, with Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Nazem Kadri. The strength of the Nashville...
I'd throw the St. Louis Blues in that argument as well.
The St. Louis Blues.
We'll talk about the Blues next segment.
The strength of this team is on the wings. I mean, Philip Forsberg, if you actually look at his stats, he actually didn't produce where you would expect him to produce on a President's Trophy winning team. And then you throw in Victor Arvidsson on that top line and Kevin Fiala, who I think is going to have a breakout season this year, and Craig Smith, a guy that doesn't get a lot of credit, but he's a perennial 40 to 50 point guy, a good grinder. Ryan Hartman is on your third line there with Nick Bonino and Colton Sissons. I mean, that's...
He had a very disappointing playoffs, though, after they brought him over from Chicago and gave up a first-round pick for him.
I would agree with that, Drew, but Ryan Hartman's a really good player. I mean, this is a guy that I think could easily pop in 20 goals.
You remember he had 5 points against the Jets in that first game as a member of the Predators right after the trade deadline last year.
Right. So having said all of that, I mean, they're still excellent in goal. Does Pekka-Rinne play less games this year? I would expect him to play less games. UC Saros, we know, guys, is probably the best backup in the league. So I think Nashville is absolutely going to compete with the Jets for the Central Division crown. And as far as the playoffs go, guys, we know a couple of years ago they went all the way to the final. So I absolutely think this team is still a Stanley Cup contender.
Moving on to the Minnesota Wild, the Jets, of course, dispatched the Minnesota Wild in that first round of the playoffs last year in five games. The Wild had a fair bit of turnover in the offseason. They brought in Greg Patterson and Matt Barkowski on defense, JT Brown, Eric Fair, Matt Reed, former Winnipeg Jets forward Matt Hendricks, and up front, and goaltender Andrew Hammond. And then, of course, they departed from the team Tyler Ennis, who was bought out of his contract after being a bust coming over from Buffalo, Daniel Winnick, Matt Cullen, Zach Mitchell, and Kyle Quincy. I think a lot of people are predicting the Wild to be one of the teams to drop out of the playoffs in the Central Division, thinking that maybe they've reached their peak. Maybe Eric Staal, who's another year older, might not have as incredible a season as he had last year. So the Minnesota Wild are a team that's, I think, in flux as we enter the 2018-19 season.
Yeah, Shawnee, I think the Minnesota Wild are going to be a competitive team this year. I could even see them making the playoffs, but the question is, are they going to get out of that first round? And if they end up playing the Winnipeg Jets or the Nashville Predators in the first round, I just don't see it happening. So I'm one of those people, Drew, that thinks the Minnesota Wild are going to fall off. Now, how far are they going to fall off? Is it going to be 10 points or 15 points? I mean, this was a 101-point team last year, and they're still led by Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. And Eric Staal, even though he might not put in 42 goals, I'd be surprised if he doesn't at least hit 30 if he's healthy. And then when you talk about some of that support on the wings, Jason Zucker, Nino Niederreiter, I think is a very underrated player. The thing with the Minnesota Wild is they do an excellent job at suppressing shots. They're a great defensive team. And even though Devan Dubnyk has had his struggles, Devan Dubnyk is still, in my opinion, a top 10, top 15 goalie in the league. So I think the Wild are going to be competitive this year, Shawnee. But for me, I don't have them as a playoff team this year in the Central.
Neither do I. And you just look at some of the names on this list. Can Eric Staal reach the 40-goal plateau once again? I mean, he had a ridiculous shooting percentage last year. Can that be sustained? Will, pardon me, will Devan Dubnyk be able to handle a workload, or can Alex Stalock provide backup tending that is comparable to, you know, playoff-caliber goaltending? Who knows? I like Jared Spurgeon a lot. And I like Ryan Suter a lot, but Ryan Suter's coming off injury. And, you know, for all intents and purposes and reports out of Minnesota, he seems to be healthy. But there's a lot of cap space in him and Parise. And if either go down, the depth of this team, I don't know if it can handle it. I also really like Jordan Greenway.
It's confirmed Jason Zucker is still on the Wild.
Okay, I'm glad we really narrowed that down here. You know, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show.
Let's talk about the Avalanche.
As we talk about the Central Division here on TSN 1290. The Colorado Avalanche, I mentioned them off the start.
Nathan McKinnon's still on the
Avalanche.
Nathan
McKinnon's still there. Yeah, you haven't made a mistake on that front. Colorado was the surprise team last year. They made that huge jump from being the bottom feeder in the NHL to a playoff team where they took the Nashville Predators to six games in the first round. You know, their big offseason acquisition was Philip Grubauer as sort of that goalie in waiting, or the 1B behind Semyon Varlamov's 1A. You know, obviously that made Jonathan Bernier expendable. Other than that, you know, a fairly similar lineup to what the Avalanche succeeded with last year. I don't see this team taking a step back. If anything, I mean, Nathan McKinnon, I think this is, you know, the Nathan McKinnon you're going to expect to see on a night-in, night-out basis as a dominant former first overall selection.
Yeah, Drew, I agree with you. I don't see the Colorado Avalanche taking a big step back points-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, the only argument you could make that would support them taking a bigger step back is the fact that the division's gotten better, right? Dallas has gotten better. St. Louis has gotten better. Obviously, the Jets and the Nashville Predators are still the cream of the crop in the Central Division. But to me, the biggest difference between last year's team and previous year's teams is that this team could move the puck out of their own zone, right? Mm-hmm. So Samuel Girard, obviously, is a young defenseman, and he added some speed to that lineup. But Nikita Zadorov, I think, really took a step forward. Obviously, Tyson Barrie, you know, one of the top offensive defensemen in the NHL. And when you're talking about Ian Cole, I actually thought that that was a pretty astute pickup by Joe Sakic. You know, Ian Cole's a guy that, you know, play on the third line, you know, good,
yeah,
solid physical
presence.
Defenseman.
Yeah.
And a guy like Matt Calvert, who was a really solid player for the Columbus Blue Jackets for many years, obviously
Brandon,
from
Manitoba,
Brandon.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I have the Colorado Avalanche as one of the four playoff teams in the Central Division. And, you know, when you talk about Nathan MacKinnon, 97 points last year in 72 games, mm-hmm. you know, does he hit 100 points this year? I mean, if you just go by the points per game, he has a good chance, right? And Gabe Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, I mean, that's a bona fide top line.
And they're younger guys that came out of college, the JT Compher and the Tyson Jost are going to take another step forward.
And Alex Kerfoot.
Alex Kerfoot as well.
That's what I was going to say, that there is pressure for Colorado to maybe show the world that last year wasn't an aberration, that, you know, that dismal season two seasons ago is in the past and the team is moving forward. But, yeah, some real fun young players to watch progress on the Avs, and then that top line, dominant.
And, Shawnee, I think there's a good chance that this year you see Philip Grubauer
become the number one goaltender.
Because right now, I mean, until Semyon Varlamov loses that number one job, it isn't Philip Grubauer's. But I do believe that Philip Grubauer will, at the very least.
Varlamov never stays healthy.
Well, yeah,
I mean, he never stays healthy.
That's one thing, but I also think Grubauer, even if he doesn't quote unquote become the number one goalie, I do think he's going to get somewhere in the range of 30 to 40 starts minimum.
I would agree with that. They didn't bring him in to have him sit as a traditional backup. They brought him in to really job share that role with Semyon Varlamov.
That much I know. I might not know where Jason Zucker plays.
We might have to clip that and use that in later shows as an example.
At least you can call it a croissant.
Yeah. Hey, that was off air. What happens off air, Shaunosaur, stays off air.
Where can you get a good croissant?
Okay. I say croissant, and these guys were giving me the gears as opposed to saying croissant, which just doesn't sound natural coming out of me, so I say croissant. And yes, I might be a bit of a Neanderthal, but that shouldn't be news to anybody who listens to this fine program. When we come back, we continue our look at the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve, a hockey show. It's our season preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Blackhawks back at full strength. Tarasenko drops it off for Dunn, a shot, rebound, score, Shea!
Continuing our look at the Central Division, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Talking about the Central Division, we touched on last year's four playoff teams, the Jets being among them, of course. We now look at the three teams that didn't make the playoffs, starting with an overhauled St. Louis Blues team, a team that fell exactly 1 point short of making the playoffs, losing game 82 in Colorado, which propelled the Avs into the playoffs and the Blues to an early tee time. Very active in the offseason. New to the St. Louis Blues, up the middle, Ryan O'Reilly and Tyler Bozak. On the wings, David Perron, Patrick Maroon in goal, Chad Johnson. Goodbye to Carter Hutton, who was a very admirable backup to Jake Allen last year. Patrick Berglund, Vladimir Sobotka, Tage Thompson, Bo Bennett, some other guys as well, Kyle Brodziak and Scotty Upshall, to name a couple others. St. Louis Blues team, to me, up the middle, where you got to start. You go up the middle, Braden Schenn, who came over from the Philadelphia Flyers not this past offseason, then two offseasons ago, Ryan O'Reilly from the Buffalo Sabres, Tyler Bozak from the Toronto Maple Leafs, all three new to St. Louis, all three acquired, two of the three acquired by free agency, two of the three acquired by trade, one in free agency. The St. Louis Blues up the middle are a very dangerous team.
I agree 100%, Drew. I think they could go head-to-head with the Toronto Maple Leafs, as we mentioned, Tavares, Matthews, and Nazem Kadri, 1-2-3. And, you know, you mentioned Ryan O'Reilly and Patrick Maroon. Patrick Maroon is not playing a fourth-line role right now. He's actually lined up on that top line with O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko, who I believe will have a bounce back year. I could easily see Vlady Tarasenko popping in 40 or 45 goals. And when you talk about the St. Louis Blues, you have to mention, again, they're dealing with injuries. Robbie Fabry, it's not going to be long-term. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be playing the first game of the season against the Winnipeg Jets. Joel Edmondson from Brandon, Manitoba, he's injured right now. Carl Gunnarsson. So it looks like right now Chris Butler and Jordan Schmaltz are going to start the season on that third pair. But two guys that you didn't mention there, Drew, Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas.
two young players who are expected to step in and have an impact for the St. Louis Blues.
Well, and I realize that, you know, right now Elias Pettersson and Rasmus Dahlin and Andrei Svechnikov, those are the guys that are getting the Calder Trophy buzz at the beginning of the season here. But when you're talking about Jordan Kyrou, he put up big-time numbers in the Ontario Hockey League. So did Robert Thomas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is going to be a very exciting team to watch. When you talk about, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs and obviously the Winnipeg Jets, the Nashville Predators, this St. Louis Blues team is going to score goals this year. They're going to be faster. And one thing I wanted to point out, Drew, the Blues had the second worst power play in the entire league last year.
Hard to believe.
That was a huge reason.
Kind of talent. Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, if they score a few more power play goals, they probably make the playoffs this year.
Do you trust Jake Allen? Sean, do you trust Jake Allen? I mean, he has been the definition of hot and cold. He has one good month, he has one bad month. He has one good month, he has one bad month. Do you trust Jake Allen to do enough to get the Blues, one, into the playoffs, and then I guess we can deal later in the season with getting them far in the playoffs?
Well, now that he doesn't have Marty Brodeur in his corner, no, I don't trust Jake Allen. No, tongue-in-cheek, obviously, little bit, but... Yeah, we've seen the good and the bad out of Jake Allen. Can he put it together for a full season? And more importantly, can the guy stay healthy? And if not, can Chad Johnson come in and provide the necessary goaltending to get them to where they need to be? I think that Jake Allen has what's in him to play well and to back up a very talented St. Louis Blues team that is looking to regain the top echelon of the Central. But it's just, he's such a wild card, this guy. But I'm gonna say St. Louis back in it. And I like their chances. Also, Robert Bortuzzo, yeah, we talked about suspended for the first game as well. So, but I do like them. I like the Blues, and I think they'll regain top three in the Central.
Johnny, I agree with you. I have them as a playoff team, and I do trust Jake Allen, but his best years were when Brian Elliott was there. So he's got to prove it this year. He's got to show that he can be the man for 60 to 65 games and put up similar numbers that he did when Brian Elliott was there.
Jake Allen, for the record, his save percentage by month last year, 921, 891, 922, 871,
yeah, exactly.
877, 916.
He finished the season very strong.
Well, but by
maybe
at that
towards
point
the end
time,
he tailed off a little bit, but... 1 point they missed the playoffs by.
I know. And remember, they waved the white flag, GM Doug Armstrong did, when they traded Paul Stastny to Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And then they went on a run at that point in time when there was no pressure on them.
Well, it shows you, they missed about 1 point and all the inconsistencies in the goaltending. You shore up a little bit more consistent goaltending and you're in the playoffs.
Dallas Stars were the only team in the Central Division to change their head coach. Jim Montgomery comes from the University of Denver to take over behind the bench in Dallas. Their big acquisition, really not a ton there. They guessed Valerie Nichushkin back from the KHL, a former first-round pick of theirs. Blake Como, Anton Khudobin to be the backup to Ben Bishop, and defenseman Roman Polak. They say goodbye to Kari Letton and Dan Hamhuis, Antoine Roussel, Greg Patterin, and Curtis McKenzie. The Dallas Stars, very top-heavy, we know, Ben Sagan. Do they have enough secondary scoring now to be a playoff team in the Central Division?
I don't think they do. And, you know, you mentioned Ben and Sagan and obviously Alex Radulov. Alex Radulov had an excellent year last year. But is Jason Spezza, alongside Valerie Nichushkin and Matthias Janmark, are they going to produce enough similar to, you know, the Jets and Predators second lines?
And the Blues
more
second
so the
lines.
Jets or the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Toronto Maple Leafs, teams like that. And Jason Spezza, we know he's fallen off big time and he's making way more money than he should. But for me, this Dallas Stars team has improved. But we just don't know what we're going to get with Valerie Nichushkin. Like, Valerie Nichushkin has all the talent in the world. I mean, he's big. He can move the puck. He's got a great shot. He's a good playmaker as well. And Anton Khudobin, Drew, that move can't be understated because Kari Lehtinen just wasn't doing the job as the backup. I mean, Ben Bishop, even though I don't think he's a top 5 or top 10 goalie in the league, I think he's a bona fide number 1 goalie. So Anton Khudobin, I thought, was a very smart move by Jim Neal. And obviously, when you're talking about, you know, a guy like Blake Como, I mean, that's a guy who's most likely going to play on your third line, maybe even fourth line. Miro Heiskanen, Sean, is a guy that I'm very excited to watch. This is a former fourth overall pick.
The guy they wouldn't trade for Erik Karlsson.
Right. And I expect him, Drew, to be sheltered earlier on. I don't expect him, you know, to start the season in the top four, but I think they eventually expect him to play on that second pair, not the top pair. So this is a team that's going to score a lot of goals, but the special teams has to be better than it was last year, and like you said, the secondary scoring is always the question mark on a team that has one of the best top lines in the league. So I think Dallas is going to be better than last year, but I still don't know if they're going to be a playoff team. I actually have them missing the playoffs again.
The final team in the Central Division was the Chicago Blackhawks. They had a woeful season last year. 33, 39, and 10 for 76 points. They were 16 points behind the Dallas Stars as the next worst team in the division. Are the Blackhawks, is there any reason to believe in a bounce-back season from the Blackhawks? Does it depend largely, almost wholly, on Corey Crawford regaining his form and being healthy in the Blackhawks' net?
Yeah, it does. I mean, as soon as Corey Crawford went out of the lineup, Shawnee, the Blackhawks' season was over. I'll say this much, though, guys. I don't think the Blackhawks are going to be as bad as some people think they're going to be. I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league or even the second or third worst team in the league. I think they're going to be competitive, and I could see them, you know, being somewhere around that, you know, 80 to 85 point range. But I think right now, that defense, to me, as it's currently constructed, just isn't good enough. And, you know, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, they've got a lot of talent there. I actually don't mind Connor Murphy. I just don't think that this team is good enough defensively. And that's even with a healthy Corey Crawford. Cam Ward, by the way, has not looked good in the preseason. I'm a big Cam Ward guy, but I just don't know if you can expect more than, what, 10 or 15 starts, 10 or 15 quality starts. So the Blackhawks are going to score goals. I really like Alex DeBrincat. He had a very underrated rookie year, in my opinion. And you know that Patrick Kane is probably going to be around 90 points again this year. But in that division, I just don't see the Blackhawks getting in.
Very quickly, Sean, before we get to your playoff predictions from the Central Division.
Well, listen, if there's goaltending issues in Chicago, they can just get Scott Foster to go back in the net again and solve everything.
There you go. As long as he's playing against the Jets. Jets kryptonite, Scott Foster. Your playoff teams in the Central Division. Sean, give me your four, I guess, could be conceivably five playoff teams that are coming out of the Central.
I'm going to go the Preds, I'm going the Blues, I'm going the Jets, and I'm going to take I'm going to go the Avalanche.
Yeah, I've got the same four teams, Sean, and the one team that I don't have making the playoffs this year that made the playoffs last year is the Wild. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it. I mean, the St. Louis Blues, they're much stronger up the middle. I just don't see the St. Louis Blues missing the playoffs this year, even if Jake Allen struggles at points in the season. So for me, it's the Jets and Predators battling out for first in the Central. I wouldn't be surprised if St. Louis is up there for the majority of the season, and then I have Colorado as the fourth team in the Central making it.
I would agree and echo with everything you guys have said. Those are my four teams. I don't think five teams come out of the Central this year, and I see the Minnesota Wild taking that step back, and I'm not sure the Dallas Stars have the scoring depth necessary to take a step forward, but I do believe the Blues get back into the playoffs. When we come back, Eric DeHatchik of TheAthletic.com is going to join us. As we do each and every year during our preview show, we talk about the Western Conference with our man, Eric DeHatchik. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're thrilled to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Eric DeHatchik. You know Eric from his work at TheAthletic.com. If it is our season preview show, there's only one man we reach out to talk about the Western Conference, and that is Eric DeHatchik. Eric, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. By the way, my Stanley Cup pick, the Boston Bruins, are down 5-0 right now. So take everything else I say for the rest of the night with a grain of salt.
It's only one game. There you have it, Eric.
We don't. That's only half a game.
There you go. It could be. Yeah, it might be 10-0 before the interview's over. Eric, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the NHL's Western Conference. You know, from my perspective, sitting here, it seems like there is a clear divide in the Western Conference between sort of the top-heavy Stanley Cup potential contenders, the Jets, the Predators, the Sharks, and the Golden Knights, and then sort of everybody else in the West. You know, obviously there'll be four more playoff teams, but to me they all seem, I guess, a step behind those top four in the battle for Western Conference supremacy.
Well, I'm not 100% sure I agree with your premise, partly because I think there's really only one bad team in the West, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. So, like, if we're going to go west-east, you know, you look at the Eastern Conference, I think they have, you know, four or five exceptional teams there, and they have four or five that are, like, in the early stages of a rebuild. So I think the separation in the East is going to be really significant, and it's going to happen, you know, probably by Christmas. And, you know, by the time we get to the trade deadline, you know, the five or six bottom teams in the East are going to be offering up players, you know, into the open market. I don't know about the West. Like, to me, I look at the Central Division. I like all of those teams. I can make a case for every one of those teams having that had a poor year last year, having a bounce back season. I mean, Chicago. You know, who would have thought 12 months ago that that team would finish last in the division? But no one anticipated that Corey Crawford would have the injury that he had, and that, you know, that some of those young defensemen like Keith and Seabrook kind of looked a little bit old. So I think if Crawford comes back and plays at a high level and can get into 50 games and is that guy again, they could be better. I think Dallas could be better. I think St. Louis, which missed the playoffs last year, is going to be a lot better. So I don't see a lot of elite teams in the West. I see a lot of very, very good teams. Now, you know, if you were to ask me to make picks, sure, I like Winnipeg and Nashville at the top of the Central, and I like Vegas and San Jose at the top of the Pacific, but I think it's going to be closer than you think.
You know, Eric, you just mentioned Winnipeg and Nashville, and being in Winnipeg, we obviously talk about the Jets a lot, and we talk about the Predators a lot because the Jets and Predators did battle in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs last year. But to me, one of the most fascinating teams in the Central Division is the Colorado Avalanche. They kind of came out of nowhere last year. Nathan MacKinnon is a Hart Trophy finalist, 97 points in 72 games. But not only do they have Nathan MacKinnon at the top, but you've got other good young players like Tyson Jost, JT Compher, Alex Kerfoot. Do you have the Colorado Avalanche taking a step back at all this year, or could they maybe take a step forward?
Well, a great question, because you know, 3 weeks before the, you know, the start of the season, the NHL brings all of the elite players to Chicago for what they call the player media tour. So we get a chance, those of us that get invited to this thing, to talk one-on-one with, I think there was 33 guys there. And so I had a good chat with Nathan MacKinnon. You know, we talked, you know, for about 4 minutes about his upcoming Tim Hortons commercial with Sid Crosby. But I quizzed him on that. You know, and in fact, it's funny because I got MacKinnon and Mark Scheifele back to back. And to me, there was the same line of questioning for both those guys. So, I mean, obviously Colorado made this huge step forward, and Winnipeg going from 87 to the playoffs was not as big a jump. But the reality is both missed the playoffs the year before, and both, you know, had these tremendous surges, and everybody at the end of the season, you know, wherever it ended, felt pretty good about themselves. So anyway, my question to MacKinnon was, you know, normally what happens when you go from, you know, 47 to 95 is that there is a reversion to the mean. And his answer was, well, we just have to establish a new mean. And it wasn't said in a cocky, condescending way. It was like we genuinely believe that we are the team that finished with 95 rather than the team that finished with 47. So, you know, I mean, the logical, rational part of me says that, you know, while that is a very good team, you know, that they're going to have a 1A, 1B goaltending rotation there. You know, some of those younger players that are in the system, like the Samuel Girard, I think still need time to evolve. I think Tyson Jost is a couple of years away from being the player that he can be. So I don't see them reaching the level that they're at. I mean, I think they're a 90-point team, 92. You know, I just think that there are a lot of teams in the middle of the Western Conference that, depending on injuries, the kind of, you know, sort of down years that sometimes good players have, you know, could finish with 90 or 92. That's out of the playoffs, you know, or 94, 96, 98, and that's in the playoffs. It's just going to be really tight wherever you are.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Eric Tkachuk of TheAthletic.com. We're talking about the Western Conference as part of our regular season preview show.
Eric, I know you keep a close eye on the Calgary Flames. I'm just curious about Dylan Dubé's preseason, how impressive it was, and was there any surprise that this guy's getting a shot on the team to start the season?
Well, you know, there's a few layers to that question. One is that, you know, like I believe in meritocracies at the NHL level, although it doesn't always work that way. So I believe if a player plays himself onto a team, he should be on the team. But what we've seen in the salary cap era is that is not necessarily always the case. And Calgary is a good example of that last year. So the best young player in training camp last year by far was Mark Jankowski. He earned a spot on the team. But, you know, the day before the season started, they called him in and they sent him down, and it was largely for cap reasons. You know, they had Troy Brower, they had Matt Stajan, and they felt that they were committed to these guys just because of the, you know, the dollars on the one-way contract. So, I mean, Jankowski eventually worked his way back to the NHL and had a decent first season. They didn't make this. I thought that was a mistake. I think it sends the wrong message to the team that you're on the team, you know, whether you play well or not. So this year, what I like about it, what they did is that, you know, Dubé won a spot and Valimaki won a spot. And if you spoke to anybody in the organization before training camp began, these guys were going to have to really play their way on. You know, I think they felt that, you know, both as first-year pros, they would probably be best served at spending some time in the minors, and that's not going to happen, or at least not now. So I like the fact that they are rewarding these guys for playing their butts off in the preseason and winning jobs. And I think that is a strong message, that if you play well and you play hard, you're going to get ice time, you're going to get opportunity. And I don't think that was the message a year ago. So I think that's an important organizational shift in the way they're approaching things.
Eric DeHatchick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Western Conference as part of our season preview show. Eric, you look at the St. Louis Blues, and up the middle, Braden Schenn, Ryan O'Reilly, Tyler Bozak, a pretty enviable centerman roster. However, on the back end, Jake Allen in goal still. Do you trust Jake Allen?
Great question. The answer, no, because I've seen him play exceptionally well. Like, on top of his game, he could be like a top 6, 7, 8 goaltender in the National Hockey League. There are times when his confidence level is so high that he just stops everything. It's like, you know, the puck is a beach ball. But we've all seen the opposite of that. You know, there are times when pucks just leak in, and, you know, goals that go in that shouldn't go in. And we've all done this long enough to know that collectively the psyche of a team changes if they cannot rely on their goaltender. If you have faith in your goaltender, the way Winnipeg did with Hellebuck last year, the way Calgary did with Smith for two-thirds of the season before he got injured, it just affects the way you play. You feel confident to go out and play, and if you make a mistake, if you make a miscue, you just feel that your goaltender is going to bail you out. Well, the problem with St. Louis is there are times when the bottom falls out of Jake Allen's game and you don't have that feeling. So that's the issue. I love the moves that they made. I think that apart from Brad Tree living in Calgary, Doug Armstrong in St. Louis was most aggressive this year in terms of going out and possibly sacrificing future assets, but getting players that he thinks can make a difference to helping them win right now. So I have St. Louis in the playoffs, but I also think that, you know, that I'm like you. I worry and wonder if what we're going to see of Jake Allen. And if we see bad Jake Allen, then all those other moves are going to go for naught, because you cannot win in the NHL without good goaltending. And that's been the case, you know, this century, last century, you know, for as long as they played the game.
Eric, you mentioned earlier that you still believe the Vegas Golden Knights are one of the top two teams in that Pacific Division. And when you look at, you know, some of the moves they made, you know, James Neal, David Perron, they're out, but they bring in Paul Stastny, they bring in Max Pacioretty, and sure, Nate Schmidt is going to miss the first 20 games of the season, but it's essentially the same team as last year, but maybe better, arguably better. I would argue that they are a better team. Is there any reason to believe that they can't go back to the playoffs and go far again this year?
Yeah, no, I subscribe to that belief too, and I think that, you know, the people that feel that the bottom is going to fall out of Vegas are the ones that believe that what they did last year was largely smoke and mirrors. It was done because, you know, a couple of days before the start of the season, there was a tragic event in Vegas, and it galvanized the team and it bonded these players, and that matters. Like, chemistry matters in the game of hockey. You have to care about the guy sitting beside you. You have to care about the guy on the ice. You have to put, you know, your own individual goals aside and pursue these greater team goals. And the teams that succeed are the ones that do that. So in addition to, you know, like having that strong outside motivational thing, every one of these players had something to prove. So that was 12 months ago. So they proved it, you know. So now there is that tendency, I think, to say, okay, you know, can they come back with that same visceral, intrinsic motivation? Or do you feel a little bit like, yeah, you know, I showed them, and does that take a little bit of the edge off the motivation? So, I mean, I don't put a lot of stock in preseason, but Vegas was one team that I was interested in seeing how they responded to the preseason, because I wanted to see how hungry they were and if they would sit on those laurels. And the sense I had from talking to a few people, but also just from watching, is that they came so close last year, you know, and they were one series away from winning the Stanley Cup, that they are motivated and they have come back with the right attitude. And I think that that is so critical, because I think that, you know, if it could have gone the other way, that, you know, that in terms of the personnel that they have, you know, they would probably be a middle of the pack team. But I think that they feel, and the message they're getting from management too, in terms of bringing in guys like Pacioretty and Stastny, is we've just shifted our organizational thinking. Instead of a slow, steady build, we're going to push real hard while we have Marc-Andre Fleury at the top of his game, and while we have, you know, this, you know, strong sense of community, and we have a fast team, and we play at a pace that lots of other teams can't match. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens in this, you know, window that we've artificially created for ourselves. And I think that the price or the cost for that is going to be that they are not going to be able to, you know, put as many organizational assets into the system as they might have. So it's possible that they could be, like, really competitive for 2, 3, 4 years and then become mediocre and then, you know, worse than that. We'll see. You know, if they draft well and if they scout well and if they get a little bit lucky in the draft, maybe that won't happen. But for now, for this year, I think they're going to be really good. And in addition to that, really fun to watch, because to me that always set them apart. You know, I've watched a lot of expansion teams, and most of them were like watching paint dry. It was painful. And so not only did Vegas have this unbelievable success, they were one of the most fun teams to watch last year, and I suspect they're going to be that again.
Eric, I'm curious just your thoughts on the Oilers entering the season and if they can regain that kind of dominant form that we once saw a couple seasons ago, and maybe on a more micro level. Just, I was reading, looking at their roster, and it just kind of came to my mind. Who do you think is putting more pressure on themselves entering this season, Milan Lucic or Jesse Puljujärvi?
Well,
contracts
okay, that's
aside.
A good question. So I was up in Edmonton about a week ago. We had an Athletic subscriber event there, and so I stayed over and went to the practice the next day and spent 10 minutes with Milan Lucic, you know, who's really one of my favorite people in the game. I didn't have the sense that he was putting that much pressure on himself. I mean, I was asking him the same questions I think that a lot of people have. I mean, he's, you know, he's changed his stick, you know, he's gone to like a stiffer flex. You know, more like what he had in Boston when he was having some success. And he said it's because, you know, that problematic wrist injury that he had in Los Angeles, for the first time in a long time, is starting to feel pretty good. So he just feels physically better, healthier than he has in a while. Certainly didn't translate in the exhibition season. He wasn't very good. But I think, you know, like a big man like that, I always believe it takes those guys a little bit longer to get into the rhythm of the season. So, you know, he felt confident. He seemed to have a much sunnier attitude. I think last year, when things started to spiral down, he just kind of got down on himself, and you know, he was not a positive presence in the dressing room. I think he's going to be that again this year. You know, Puljujärvi is a young player, and you know, if you've watched him closely, there are times when flashes of that ability that made him such a high draft choice shine through. So I think that they're taking the right course with him. They're being patient with him. They are not pushing him. They're not insisting that he be Connor McDavid's winger right now. I think that's going to be Ty Ratty for a little while. But I think ultimately he has the skill set to be that guy. And I think we have to be a little bit more patient with, you know, so-called late bloomers, because we are so used to seeing Austin Matthews come in and Jack Eichel come in and McDavid come in and just set the league on fire. So here's a fourth overall guy rated third and wasn't an overnight sensation. And, you know, you just give him time. That would be my advice with Puljujärvi. Just give him time.
Last couple for you, Eric. Eric DeHatchick of TheAthletic.com, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Eric, from an outsider's perspective, you're in Alberta. What do you see of the Winnipeg Jets this season?
So I spoke with Kevin Cheveldayoff today for about 15 minutes for a piece that I'm going to do in the next couple of days. And because I didn't really, I watched a little bit of their games on television, but I didn't have last year I was at their camp. This year I didn't have a chance to go. So I'm seeing it, as you suggest, more as an outsider. But what I would say is that, when you look at the roster that they had at the end of last season, you subtract, Paul Stasny obviously there as a rental and they weren't able to bring him back. But Roslovich is going to be a regular for them, and Veselainen looks like a guy with a tremendous amount of talent. I they still have really good pieces. So, as long as, Connor Hellebuck can play at the same level that he played at, that to me is the one thing, that they've left themselves a little bit vulnerable if he gets an injury or if there's a little bit of a regression there. Can Brossois be a guy that plays and wins some games? The way the league is right now, it's really tough to make the playoffs if you don't get wins from your backup goaltender. I think Winnipeg is good enough that and I think Hellebuck is young enough and strong enough to play, 65 games. So it probably is less of an issue there. An injury to their starting goaltender would put a lot of what we expect that they can accomplish this season in jeopardy. Other than that, I really don't see any issues. They are so deep up front. The right side of their defense is the best in the National Hockey League. Left side, not bad. So I think that they have a cushion that a whole lot of other teams don't have.
Last one for you, Eric, and it's always the cliche question that you know is coming. Your Stanley Cup finalists and your Stanley Cup winner, if you do not mind.
Well, it's 6-0 Washington over Boston, and I picked Boston, San Jose in the final. So, however, I will say this. It seems to me that didn't the Jets get blasted in the first game last year?
They did, by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and Edmonton, I was in Edmonton for the home opener against Calgary, and they were sensational. They beat them 3-0. Talbot looked great. McDavid scored like two, goals that you kept seeing on the highlight reel pretty much all season. And so, as bad as Winnipeg was in their opener and as good as Edmonton was in their opener, it didn't have a long-term effect on the 82-game schedule. So, yeah, for the Athletic, I picked Boston and San Jose, so I'll tell you that. Feel a little bit less certain about Boston right now, to be honest, but it is just one game. So those are my picks, and we'll see what happens.
Do you play Fortnite when you go out on the road?
No. In fact, so we had this survey where we all had to make predictions for the season, and the very last question was, how many Fortnite controversies would there be in the National Hockey League? Plus or minus 5.5. I went under because I thought, how can it possibly be an issue? And, we've had probably two already, right? Because, Vancouver tweeted what they said, and then yeah. Patrick Laine today. So that makes it two, and we're two games into the season, so I'm going to be wrong about that as well. And you probably have to explain Fortnite to me. I get that it's a video game, but that's about as far as I
That's as far as I know as well. It's a video game. I've never played it. I'm not sure why it's controversial, but I guess people need things to talk about, right?
Well, I used to play Ms. Pac-Man, so believe me, it's a generational thing. I get it,
yeah.
But it is not my generation, so I really don't feel I can comment about it.
Sounds very reasonable. Eric DeHatchick of TheAthletic.com. Eric, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us and appreciate your insight into the NHL's Western Conference.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care, Eric. When we come back, we continue our look at the Pacific Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Big thanks to Eric DeHatchick for joining us. Still to come on the program, Kevin Allen of USA Today is going to join us to talk about the Eastern Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you love Bernstein's and you want to deliver it straight to your house, they do offer that service. Shopbernsteins.com. check it out. You get right to your door. It just makes it that much easier. You don't even have to get off the couch. Just get on the computer. Let your fingers do the typing. ShopBernstein's.com.
My Bernstein's actually comes right to my bed.
Right to your bed, really. Yep. That bedside service, is that what they offer?
Yeah.
Breakfast in bed.
The door is not quite good enough, Drew. I need that Bernstein's to come right to my bed. I don't actually want to get out of bed.
I got to say, you're about a month away from just washing yourself with a rag on a stick. Is that your goal?
It's not my goal.
But it just might be what inevitably happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not necessarily your goal. It's just your fate. Anyways, Liver, welcome back to the program.
I'm signed up to do a boot camp, though.
It's actually just you wearing a boot. Is that what it is? Or is it like a boot on your car? Or like, you know,
he's just putting on his winter boots.
Yeah, that's right. He's bending down, and he had to sign up to do it. It takes him a long time to bend down and tie those boots up.
I had salad this week.
Wow. That was on a burger. I mean, it was like lettuce on a burger.
As a side to what?
Yeah, you know, a salad. God help you. Anyways, let's talk about the Vegas Golden
Knights.
Yeah, exactly. Where are the Timbits? Let's talk about the Vegas Golden Knights as we continue our look at the Western Conference and the Pacific Division. The Golden Knights, I mean, one of the great stories of all time in sports, of course. And they get all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. They fall short to the Washington Capitals. They're a better team, in my perspective, than they were last year. Adding Max Pacioretty already, adding Paul Stastny. They lose James Neal and David Perron. They lose a couple of their other defensemen on the back end, Lucas Pisa, Jason Garrison, and Clayton Stoner. The big question is the suspension to Nate Schmidt. He's going to miss a quarter of the season as a result of a performance-enhancing drug suspension. What do you see about the Golden Knights this year? Are they still the cream of the crop in the Pacific Division, or do you see them maybe taking a step back?
I don't believe they are the cream of the crop, Drew, but I want to address Nate Schmidt because...
Like, personally?
No.
Okay.
What you just said about Nate Schmidt, he's going to miss the first 20 games of the season. That's not going to be taken lightly by the Golden Knights organization. I mean, Nate Schmidt is a top four defenseman for them. So I don't think it's going to mean necessarily that the Golden Knights, you know, lose 15 of the first 20 games or miss the playoffs because of it. But Nate Schmidt was very valuable for them.
Yeah.
Nate Schmidt was a third pairing defenseman for the Washington Capitals, but a top four guy for the Golden Knights. So I just wanted to mention that. But I agree with you, Drew. If you want to talk about offensively,
yeah,
I mean, James Neal is a perennial 25-30 goal guy, but so is Max Pacioretty. In fact, he's a 30-40 goal guy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about Paul Stastny, I mean, for me, that's an improvement for your second line center, right? So you're able to put out William Karlsson and Paul Stastny out there. I mean, Eric Halla is another guy that we talked about earlier, used to play for the Minnesota Wild.
I mean, you want to emphasize that?
This team right now, I mean, I still don't think their defense matches up against teams like the San Jose Sharks or the St. Louis Blues or even the Winnipeg Jets as far as decors go. But Marc-Andre Fleury is still a bona fide top 10 goalie in the league. You know what you're going to get from Marc-Andre Fleury, whether he plays 50 or 55 games. I wouldn't expect him to play 65 games, but this Golden Knights team is going to be competitive. But with the moves that the San Jose Sharks made, namely acquiring Erik Karlsson, to me, the Sharks have taken a big step forward, and they're the cream of the crop. But I do still have the Golden Knights as a playoff team.
What about it, Sean? Do you have the Sharks ahead of the ahead of the Golden Knights? Does the Erik Karlsson acquisition make all the difference in San Jose? I mean, other than Karlsson, and I mean, he's, you know, you don't need anything more than that when you have a back end that now includes Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns, you know, on the same team.
You're forgetting one major point in San Jose. Joe Thornton has shaved his beard.
Yes.
So he is going to be at least 3 kilometers an hour faster.
He's aerodynamic at this point in time.
He's putting up 90 assists this year.
What about it? Are the Sharks better than the Golden Knights in your mind?
I think they're going to surpass the Knights on the cream of the crop of the Pacific. Vegas doesn't have the surprise factor anymore. A lot of teams will be gunning to shut down that top line. They will play with speed. They will play with the counterattack that we saw in the playoffs and that we saw all year last year. But I think that San Jose is going to rise to the top.
When we come back, we'll look at the rest of the Pacific Division. Do the Oilers bounce back? Do the Flames bounce back? How bad are the Canucks going to be? And what happens with the Kings and the injury-riddled Anaheim Ducks team? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.